supposed to be, and now they are taking it up to the power satellite. If the American TV news can be believed, the power satellite is already beaming power to Earth. Soon that power will kill thousands, and the Americans will never know that we caused it to be so. They will think their satellite malfunctioned. They will believe that it is dangerous. They will demand that it be destroyed. Not a bad result for the cost of 3 martyrs, and one of them doesn't even know he will become a martyr. One should never give news reporters free liquor, thought al-Bashir. He stood in the corner of Hangar A and watched the reporters and camera crews swilling the champagne and harder spirits that Dan Randolph had provided, making asses of themselves as they got gloriously drunk. Dan had wisely made arrangements to have his own security personnel drive the louts to the Astro Motel for the night. No fool, this man Randolph. Governor Scanwell and Senator Thornton had taken a perfunctory sip of champagne and then flown off to their next campaign stop. The noise level in the metal-walled hangar was becoming intolerable. Al-Bashir finished the plastic cup of cola that he had been holding for nearly an hour, then walked out into the parking lot and got into his Mercedes. He started up the engine and turned the air conditioning on high, then pulled out his cell phone and called his office in Houston. They would patch his call to Tunis, where in turn the call would be forwarded to Marseille. The roundabout routing was time-consuming, but al-Bashir wanted to make certain his call would not be traced. Perhaps I should speak to Garrison, he thought, and inform him of Randolph's success. With a slight smile, he wondered if the news would give the old man a fatal stroke or heart attack. Not likely. Garrison is made of stronger stuff than that. His conversation with the Egyptian in Marseille was brief. It is a success, al-Bashir said, without even identifying himself. It goes well here, the Egyptian replied. Good. I will arrive there near dawn tomorrow, I should think. We will expect you then. Al-Bashir clicked the phone off. Now to find April, he thought. It's time to take her away with me. Once Jane left the celebration, Dan decided he'd had enough of it too. He saw April in the crowd, talking to al-Bashir. Then the Arab went out and didn't come back, leaving April to chat with a couple of the news people. Some chat, Dan thought. You have to scream at the top of your lungs just to hear yourself think. The noise level was starting to hurt his ears. Vicky Lee was somewhere in the crowd. He'd lost sight of her. So he made his way through the drinkers to Niles Muhammad and asked his help in loading a carton of champagne bottles and a cooler of ice into one of the company minivans. You going to have your own party? Muhammad asked, his face glowering with suspicion. Sort of, said Dan with a lopsided grin. With Muhammad in the passenger seat beside him, Dan drove out to the main gate. The state police contingent had gone, but the Astro guards were still there, and a handful of demonstrators were sitting disconsolately on the hoods of their cars, their placards down on the ground. Dan told the guards to open the gate, then drove the minivan a few yards up the road and pulled over to the side. Hopping out of the car, he went to its rear hatch and popped it open. I thought you guys might like some champagne, he said brightly. A short, compactly built man with a sandy ponytail walked up to Dan, suspicion etched on his face. Champagne? For us? Why not? Dan said, grinning. Just because we don't agree doesn't mean we have to be sore at each other. Rick Chatham stared at Dan. You're Dan Randolph, aren't you? Right, said Dan, handing Chatham a bottle of champagne. I don't get it. With a quick shrug, Dan said, Look, you made your demonstration. You did your thing, and we did ours. The satellite's beaming power, and the world hasn't come to an end. Let's have a drink. Several more of the demonstrators came up behind Chatham, eyeing the champagne. This isn't over, you know, Chatham said. We haven't given up. Fine, Dan replied. In the meantime, have some bubbly. It's kind of warm, but there's a cooler of ice here. The demonstrators crowded around the rear end of the minivan, grabbing bottles. Matagorda Island, Texas. Al-Bashir turned off the engine on his Mercedes and walked back into the hangar. The noise was still painful, although the crowd was noticeably smaller. April was still there, and when she caught sight of al-Bashir, she looked slightly startled, almost afraid. He smiled at her from across the crowded hangar floor, then went to the makeshift bar and asked for two colas. As he threaded his way through the crowd toward April, he saw a dusty minivan pull up directly in front of the hangar door. Dan Randolph got out with the scowling black technician. "I wonder where he was," al-Bashir asked himself. "No matter. His fate is about to be sealed, and I have a rendezvous of my own to make." He stopped at one of the shaky little round tables that had been set up across the hangar floor. Putting down the two plastic cups of cola, al-Bashir reached into his jacket pocket for the little vial of pills he had brought with him from Marseille. He shook one out and made a show of putting it in his mouth, then taking a swallow of his cola. Actually, he palmed the pale pink lozenge and dropped it inconspicuously into the other drink. Somatomax, it was called. A gamma-hydroxybutyrate, used for bodybuilding in Europe. Illegal in the United States. Its side effects included euphoria and drowsiness. An admirable date-rape drug. Much more subtle and effective than the roofies and clonazepam that American college boys used. While Jane was present, Dan had stayed as far from Vicky Lee as he could. But now that the senator had left with Scanwell, Dan simply drifted through the crowd, nursing a plastic cup of flat and warm champagne, thinking, what the hell? If she comes over, there's no harm being sociable to her. He still worried about allowing her into his apartment upstairs, but he realized it would be damnably awkward to steer her out to whichever motel she was staying in. We'll see what develops, he told himself. Even across the crowded, noisy hangar, April was alarmed by what she saw in al-Bashir's eyes. A cold shudder ran through her. You must be crazy, she told herself. Go to France with him? In his private jet? That's like saying yes to him before he even asks. And yet she had told Emmons that she would go. They wanted to get evidence against al-Bashir. The man might be the one behind the crash and the murders. The one who was trying to ruin Dan. But she fished her cell phone out of her purse and tapped out Emmons's personal number. One ring. Two. Come on, April said, seeing that al-Bashir was pushing his way through the crowd toward her, a drink in each hand. Emmons here. Kelly, it's April. Where are you? I'm still at Matagorda. She hesitated a moment. Al-Bashir was almost within earshot. Can you talk any louder? Emmons asked. There's a lot of noise in the background. I'm not going, April said, as loudly as she dared. What? I'm not going through with it. I'm sorry, but I just can't do it. Emmons said nothing for a long moment, then, Can't say I blame you, kid. I'm sorry. Don't be. It was a crazy idea in the first place. Al-Bashir stepped up to her, smiling, holding the two drinks. I'll call you later. Okay. Call me when you get home, no matter what time it is. All right. Thanks. April clicked off the phone and put it back in her purse. Have a drink, April, said al-Bashir, proffering one of the plastic cups. She hesitated. Smiling more broadly, al-Bashir said, It's non-alcoholic. Coke. Coca-Cola, that is, not cocaine. He laughed mildly. April took the cup. It felt cold and slippery in her hand. Then she looked up and saw halfway across the hangar floor that a buxom young news reporter was sidling up to Dan and he was grinning at her. April felt her innards tense. Al-Bashir said something to her, but she didn't hear it. She watched as Dan slipped an arm around the woman's waist. The woman looked familiar to her. Vicky Lee, she recalled, from Aviation Week. She's been here before, April knew. The way Dan was looking at her, there was far more than publicity on his mind, she could see. Al-Bashir lifted his cup in a mock toast. April made herself smile at him and sipped at the drink he had given her. Williamson found that if he didn't move his head, he was all right. His stomach had settled down, just as Nikolaev had foretold. That's the one thing they can't train you for in the simulators, he told himself. Zero gravity screws up all your body fluids. His head still felt stuffed, as if he had a monster of a sinus infection. But he didn't feel as if he had to puke anymore, for which he was bloody grateful. I wonder if Buchacha